Blog Talk Radio.
Talking to a young man today by the name of Rod Taylor. He's a well-known photographer out of South Africa. Mr. Taylor, you on the phone? Hello?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Mr. Taylor, how you doing, sir?
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
I'm fine, thank you. It's about 3 o'clock in the morning, my time. I'm 7 hours ahead of you.
Wow. Are you in South Africa right now?
Yeah, right in Joburg.
Hello?
Yep. Downstairs in my office on the computer.
Okay, let's start the radio show off. All right, let's start the radio show off with giving the listeners your name and where you're from.
Okay, tell me, just give me.
Hello?
Yes, I'm here. Just tell me when you're ready for me to do that.
I'm ready. We're ready. We're on the air right now.
Oh, okay. Okay. I'm Rod Taylor, and I'm originally from New York. Born in Harlem, Westchester kid, and came over to South Africa. I guess the first time was back in the end of 97. And I've been traveling back and forth from New York to Joburg up until about maybe 8 years ago. And now I live here and I visit New York. And I was back there in September, October.
Okay, so you stated that you're a native New Yorker. So you're a native New Yorker.
That's correct.
So how did you get into photography?
Where I grew up, in terms of it was actually Greenberg, White Plains, New York, Greenberg. There was a group of us at the time. You must have heard of a group called Atlantic Star. And I was around it. Went to a pretty progressive school. There was a number of us that was basically in art. Surrounded by Gordon Parks, another brother by the name of John Shearer. Then we had, Rocky B. Carava, and a number of other guys. And it was just a group of, people that were older than I was and more of my mentors. Tabby is something that I've always, the visual medium was something that I've always loved. And it was adding some music and, just being, eclectic, like the dark room, but I like the Nickels and Sisters. And a buddy of mine, Ron Johnson, had a dark room. And, as you know, I guess I was out of high school at that point. I was in college. And yeah, I started to appreciate the dark room at that point as well. But there were a lot of things that you could do in the dark room. And I don't know. That's fair. I mean, you know, we were, a lot of us were in line. And it was a bit more expression. I don't want to run on. You tell me.
Right. So you started photography. You started taking pictures. So when you first got paid by taking pictures, was it like, wow, okay, this is what I want to do, and I feel like I'll enjoy doing this?
Well, the photography, basically, when you're a kid, while you're novice, you know, back in those days, I mean, it's always one of those things, you know, it's an expensive medium, and you know, you buy film, and wow, you know, the film's 36 images on a roll of film. It's not like today in terms of your digital application, your cards, you know. What I did back then, wow, man, was that a few of my friends had gotten married, or somebody would ask, you know, hey, can you make a picture of me? You know, I want to be a model or something like that. And, you know,
since you've been doing photography, what's like something that really made you say, like some pictures or artifacts that you took pictures of, or photos or persons that made you say, you know what, I like this. I like this person. This is an iconic person, because I see
it
on your website. You have Al Jarreau and, you know, Lauryn Hill and different people that you photographed. Does that keep you going?
Time to go on. Basically, I'm going back in my repertoire. Folks, friends of mine that were older, you know, they were working for Life magazine and stuff, and, you know, they really covered a lot of the movement. When I really started to get into making images and stuff, I was, because of my background, I loved entertainment, and I loved the performing arts. And, I probably photographed without, you know, I'm being humble about it, and this is some, this is what we call grip and grin shots and stuff like that. I've done some album covers, and but I probably photographed people like everybody from Andy Warhol, Yoko Ono, the Bud of Flat. Danny DeVito and Rita Perlman. You know, those were the days of conventional photography. It's just been a span. And then being on the road with Atlantic Star, you know, at that point, you know, working with A&M Records, you know, you get a chance to, you know, that was Rick James and Shaka and Smokey and Eddie and OJs and just a lot of people, you know, just being around them, you know, being able to capture some images, images that were published, more grip and grin kind of things, you know, that kind of stuff. There were some quiet moments. But I found a way where it actually paid for my, you know, for my livelihood. I was blessed to be able to enjoy it, you know. And then encourage other young folks to be able to, you know, understand if they love it, you know, I'll help. You can teach what you know what I mean?
Right. How was it filming Mandela's cell?
When I went over to Robben Island, you know, South Africa, you know, it's more just South Africa. When I came here, South Africa reminded me of the States back in the 60s. Okay, you know, I was still a little at certain points, but what I'm saying is that the opportunities, you know, I mean, the civil rights movement that we've had, you know, at that point offered us as Black American, African Americans opportunities, you know, which we, you know, our families and forefathers had fought for. And there was a lot of positive movement there. So coming here to South Africa, it was a joy because basically it was similar in certain regards. It was fresh. It was, you know, people were looking to do things. There's a lot of history. I mean, going to Mandela's cell, basically Mandela, as everybody knows or should know, he spent a large period of his life on a place called Robben Island in Cape Town.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can compare. Well, you can't really, but in some regards, if you think of Alcatraz, you know, out there, you know, with San Francisco, you know, Oakland around there, Robben Island is like that. The difference is, you know, there's a number of differences, but it's still an island of incarcerated folks. And in his case, and in a lot of their cases, because of the weather, you know, South Africa has beautiful weather, better than, you know, in different parts of the state, similar. But it's a very cold and windy and hard climate in Cape Town at a certain point. And these gentlemen, I mean, fighting for a struggle. It was deep, man. It was emotional. It was like actually, if, you know, cats going to a certain part of Africa with the slave trade, you know, and I have not done that as of yet, which will happen. But I had friends back in the 70s that went there, man. And, you know, all of those cells down there, cats were coming and they were crying. They were feeling the power of Nomo, you know, still existing spirits and stuff. You understand what I'm saying?
Right, right. So I know by even just a little bit off the subject, but on the same subject, I spent a little time in prison, and I know how the cells look. And I know it's just, you know, a small space equivalent to like a bathroom possibly. You know, it's something that you would have to, you know, spend most of your days in. So I can imagine how it is in South Africa and what the cells look like. I know they look nothing like what United States imprisonment looks like.
My brother, you don't want to come here and go to jail. Sure. I mean, no. It's like being in Jamaica, being in Haiti, being anywhere in third world, whatever, and going to jail. Okay. No. I mean, it's totally different than all the cats that think that they're really bad. Come over here and you want to be incarcerated. Yeah, we'll check this jail out. They got one with the outhouse in the back. You're gonna have to do
right. That seems just those pictures alone seems like humbling experiences to where it's like, you know what, you would want to do right, plus you would want to know about that type of, you know, that aspect of South Africa or of any other countries, you know, to pretty much keep you on the right path, me personally. Go ahead.
No, I mean, see, again, you know, how can I say this? When I came here, man, I mean, it was one of those experiences that, you know, in my personal life, I'm married in South Africa, and I have three children here. I've been married before, former spouse, and I have two children back in the States, all right? And one is 29, as of today, and the other one will be 24. And then I have an 11-year-old and two 9-year-olds. So, as you can see, I'm not a Madala, but I've been out there a little bit. And I've always been, as we, from my community back in the States, it's always been about the kids and about the youth and transference of knowledge and information. Now, in certain cases, we've made many mistakes. But still, it was about our youth doing better than us. And,
right.
Coming here, the children here, all right, in the squatter camps and the townships, Alexandria, Sorrento, which is Sorrento's major, I mean, Moyloy, I mean, to see, and you see, you know, I mean, similar to Haiti and the down in Brazil and, you know, certain parts, it's just that South Africa, as an American, has all the, let's say, the amenities of, for us, middle-class America to some degree. All right, it's like the United States of Africa, all right, and to, you know, I don't want to be held accountable for that, but basically the infrastructure, you come here, man, you'll see things that you're forgetting. Are you sure I'm in Africa? You know, South Africa, Mandela Square, it's cosmopolitan, but then in the rural areas, to get to my point with children, I would always, they always, if they could have the opportunity to come to my country and our country as I'm engaging with you, man, they would soar. They would soar. Because when you're living in a shack that is like maybe the size of not even a, yeah, about maybe a small project bedroom, you know, a little bigger than a project bedroom, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it has corrugated roofs so that when it rains, water leaks. And they're putting paper up. They actually add is like glue and all this other stuff. And you got to dig your ditch. It's an outhouse, okay? Seriously.
Mm.
And when you got that and somebody offers you a brick building, then you're gonna really want it, you know? And then the thing is that our, how can I say it? Our media, you know, when I came over here, Tupac, you know, and Biggie, they were gone, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, the censorship here wasn't like the censorship in the United States. So therefore, the videos and DVDs and all of that stuff that would come over here that would represent, you know, the hip-hop, you know, and the bling-bling and the bang-bang and all that other stuff was in its raw form. And so the kids here would see that. And they would want to emulate Americans, you know, the young cats from the hood and all of this. But they also had a strong religious background. So they would be amazed when I would talk about the similarity of the projects, our projects, our family dynamics in our projects, as well as their townships, because their townships are nothing but horizontal projects. We live in vertical projects because we lack land, okay? There's a lot of land here, so their projects are horizontal buildings and stuff like that. And in worst case scenario, you got chicken huts, man. You know, I mean, the pride that exists here is so much. And I said, and you follow my, you know, because I'm rambling, but I'm trying to give you pictures, you know, quickly.
Right.
I said to a number of children, I said, hey, man, you know what? I said, at this stage, our civil rights movement was like at that point, like 40-something years ago, and it just happened. And, you know, keep your hope up because, you know, you guys, and they're geographically smarter in some regard than some of our kids. And they're always looking for the opportunity with some of our, and I'm generalizing now, because I've been, like, you know, a little fed up, you know, it's part of my lineage, too, there, you know, in terms of certain things, but. Like, yo, man, what are you on the corner for? You waiting for what? Yo, man, you got a dollar there. What? A dollar?
Wow.
So if I can get a dollar, you get a dollar. You know, where these kids are saying, sir, do you have anything for me to do, please? I will work for you. I will do anything, you know.
And what's so interesting about that?
I'm sorry?
No, I was about to say, what's so interesting about that is that a lot of us in the United States that know that, you know, South Africa, the motherland, they all want to go back or always say, send us back to our motherland, send us, I want to go back to Africa, but really don't know, you know, how everything is really structured there without a brother like you to come and really who's been there and lived it and see it day by day can really, and from New York, from the city, the big cities, and go there and really talk about how it really is living there, physically, financially, spiritually, and all. And just hearing it from you is, like, overwhelming.
It's a beautiful South Africa is a beautiful place, man. Let me just say this. I mean, any American, any black American, and I'll qualify that, any black American, okay, that has never been stepped foot on the motherland on this continent, and they did it for the first time, will have an emotional experience, okay? The generations, I am part of the civil rights movement, even though I was young. I mean, obviously, but I still was part of it, you know, in terms of, you know, just my age and the era. I don't know about the young kids nowadays, you know, because Travis Smiley says, you know, they're not a part. They're not really a part of the movement. They're a product in some regards, you know, but they haven't gone through that stuff, you know. And rightly so, nobody's judging that. But from, you know, the older folks and people that have understood the struggle, to come here is an emotion. It's a humbling experience. The beauty that exists here, oh, man, you can't, you know. I mean, from lions, tigers, and bears, you know, my nephews, Uncle Ron, don't get eaten up by no lions, tigers, and bears. And, man, let me tell you something, man. I'll be bringing videotapes back and photographs back and showing them that, really, there is no difference. If you look at the wardrobe, you look at, you know, just the folks, there are so many people that look like the people back home. You dig? So it's enlightening. And the pride that exists here among the folks that live in the project or the ghetto, you know. I mean, we had that. We had that back in the state until crack came in, okay, that tore down our family structure. Because basically, back before then, it was a village that raised a child, and I'm a product of that. Here, obviously, there's, you know, they got certain things, but it's not as bad as it seems to, as it's so-called publicized, you know, with the crime and all this. Maybe it is crime, you know, but when you look at any country, it's not a police state. Like, our state is, our country is a police state. Our country, period. You know, here, yes, there, you know, there has been crime, but sometimes we blow, you know, our media blows it out of proportion, if you got me, to deter people. Brother, let me tell you, the place is, when I mean beautiful, yeah, you can go to Cape Town, you can go to Durban, okay, which is like equatorial, and you can go out, you know, I mean, even in the townships, man, I mean, enterprising folks, you know, and it's a beautiful place, but you can't be fooled, because to live here, like, there are a number of young Turks that are doing well that have come here before me and are in an academic. Like, if you're in finance, you can work anywhere around the world, all right? Mm-hmm. You're not a photographer. Right. You're not a photojournalist, you know. I mean, it's a little different, you know. It's a little different, right? But if you're in finance, so there are cats here, man. You know, like now, they came over, like, in their 20s, and they're doing very well, you know. And now the continent has opened up, and certain areas in the continent has opened up, and they're doing very well. I mean, you know, but it takes time. You got to have your resources together to make a first visit. That's great. Many folks have said, as I've seen them, and our people have seen them here. We have a large population of African Americans here. We also have our own church. You know, we have numbers. I mean, our pastor's from Washington, D.C. He did at, how you can say, a non-denominational church.
Right.
There's been a documentary that's made on that church, you know, and the whole of African Americans being here in South Africa. So, yeah, I encourage anybody, but the fact is that people, y'all, man, it's 17 and a half hours.
What?
Wow, I go to Cancun. I go here. you know. But yeah, you know, I know Europe, but I know that, well, you're perpetuating a fraud because you need to come over here at some point if you choose to. And then you know what you're talking about. They try to put on a dashiki and all of a sudden thing. Yeah, man. Well, you know, if you've been anywhere on the continent, God bless you. But if you haven't and you've been to Cancun and you want to be, you know, right on, you know, Kunjani, Ace Kona, you know, I do Milan. Yeah, okay. I'll talk to you later. If you understand what I'm saying.
So how expensive is it to plan a trip or to have a trip of, let's say, about a week there in South Africa?
Well, number one, you wouldn't want to come a week. Because, again, you know, we're 7 hours ahead of you at this point because of daylight savings time on your time, okay? Expensive, I mean, it's like airfare. To be honest with you, airfare, when I went back this day, I mean, they have, like, Emirates. Is a little less. Well, it's about, I mean, you're going to be flying coach anyway. Now, you know, not unless you're going to be flying, you know, business class, which is, you know, a little bit more. Somebody else is fronting your bill. But on coach lines, it's like about $1,100, you know, to come here. If anybody wanted to come here, I would encourage them to, you guys got my contact number, all right? And we do have, we have folks from Chicago here, a young lady who has a bed and breakfast, right? She has two of them, okay? She's a lawyer, and her and her husband invested in some real estate here, okay? And they have two bed and breakfasts, and they do a lot of tours for so-called senior citizens, different church groups, and everything else. So there is means here. Now, how expensive is it? You guys are millionaires, man, compared to us. The reason being is because the dollar is 7.5 of my dollars, all right? It costs me more money to send money back to the States than it does for me when I get money from the States. You got me?
Mm-hmm. Right.
When I first came here, the rand, the Kruger rand, the dollar was 14 to 1. That meant $1 of my American money was 14 of South African money.
Wow.
So as a black American coming, I was shook. I would take out, my wife told me, she said, and this is when I was going back and forth because my money was coming from the States in a larger amount, all right? I would go there, man, and you know when you go out, $100 is nothing. $150 is nothing, okay? And I mean when you get to a certain age, $150 is nothing. All right? $50 is nothing, all right? So, you know, man, I was going to the bank or the cash machine, and next thing you know, two to three times a week, and I was pulling out money like crazy, which was chump money. And for me at that time, because in the businesses I had back in the States, you know, that was easy, okay? And that was, you know, that was a long time ago, man. That was about, that was back in the early 2000s. You have me?
Yes, I'm hearing you. I'm with you.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. So basically, but if you come here, I mean, food is very good. They have, you know, the different indigenous, you know, like the African food here is like our soul food. All right. So where we get, you know, pork chops and gravy and all that other stuff, they have pot. They have stew. And they have all kinds of stuff, man. I mean, it's serious stuff, and it's like eating soul food here. So the food here is outstanding. And I don't know. Are you getting a picture at this point? I'm just rambling.
I really am, and I'm sure that our listeners are as well. So is there any books, films, you know, museums that you recommend anybody to read or must-see before they go out there or while they're there?
Well, I mean, Mandela has a bunch of books. I mean, you know, that's on the movement. I mean, you know, when you go to, when they look up on Google, Mr. Mandela, Nelson Mandela, I mean, obviously. Other books. There's a person, his name is Kenneth Walker. All right, at some point you might want to follow up with me on that and see if you can have him on your talk show. Because Kenny, he was African, he was the African correspondent for Nightline. Ted Koppel's Nightline.
Right.
And Ken can give you a whole other perspective and give you his literature. I mean, Kenny's stuff. I mean, he's a bad dude. Okay? He was the one. Have you heard of Charlene Hunter Gault?
Yes, I have.
You've heard of CNN? You have, right?
Yes.
Okay, well, she and Ron Gault, they live here as well, but they're bi-continent like I am. You know, we're all bi-continent, basically. And she, you know, she's another person. But I'm saying, you know, Catherine, and then in terms of our pastor, Rob Kelly, if you really want to follow up on some of this stuff, man, I mean, I can send Leslie some stuff, all right, some contacts, where you can get all different kinds of perspectives on South Africa, because I think it's folks in the States, black Americans, we do need to, at some point, if people can afford to come here.
Right.
It would help in the sense that it would be a joyous trip. There's been a bunch of senior citizens that come here because, you know what, and they got the time now, and they have the reserves now. But for some of the young folks, I mean, there's a lot of cultural exchange going on that is kind of kept, you know, at bay. I mean, Oprah's been over here. I photographed NDRE, Oprah's school, you know, and Oprah's been back and forth, you know, and at one point we had engaged. So that is like one school that you know about, Oprah's school, right?
Right.
But there's
right.
so many of these kind of cultural, I mean, exchanges that are going on. And now with Twitter and all the other stuff going on, and then you got the Nokia phones that can take pictures or snapshots, they can go ahead and download it and communicate internationally. I mean, there's some serious stuff going on here. And the brothers and the sisters that are going to university and stuff, man, they're on point.
Nice. So I'm blown away. So what to you? What makes a good photographer? What makes a photographer stand out with his pictures and what he does to be able to, you know, really make a business out of being a photographer?
Well, nowadays, I mean, you know, nowadays you get, what is it called, CNN, all of these sort of things going on with the instant market, the amateur market. I think, you know, it's funny because it competes with real photojournalism in some regards. To be a photographer, I mean, it's a wonderful art form. To be able to, you know, in some regards, what makes a good photographer? Capturing strong images. I mean, what decreases in your head, what you're thinking about. I mean, there's so many facets of photography. I mean, there's art, there's fashion, there's still life, there's reportage, there's, you know, and then you can boil it down to all subcategories, make a living. I mean, there's a lot of brothers that do a wedding, you know. You know, how do you make a wedding creative? Well, they started to make things creative now. You know, whatever you see in your mind's eye, you want that person to see. Your image should be a reflectance of what you see. So, therefore, anybody that sees it can understand or hopefully will say, yeah, man, you know what? Like,
right.
Yeah, that's it. It's like when Gordon, you know, when Gordon, I mean, in the days of the Civil Rights Movement, okay?
Right. Mr. Taylor.
Yes.
Hello? I'm sorry. We have to end the show, but can you stay on the phone for a little while longer, because I would like to talk to you a little more. But we have to end the show right now, and we definitely need you to come back and continue.
Okay, that's cool. Did it make sense? I mean, I'm rambling. Did you pick up anything?
It all made sense, and I'm sure it made sense to the listeners as well here on the Gist of Freedom radio show. Thanks a lot for sharing your story. And is there anything, tell the viewers where they can contact you at.
Okay, tell me when to do that.
Right now.
Oh, okay. I mean, all right, all the listeners, yes, it is, quarter to four now, 20 to 4 a.m. It's the first time really doing this. Thank you for listening to all of this. I can just give out my number, and if anybody wants to get in touch with me, they can. You dial it from the States, 011-2711-469-3278. That's my landline number, so that's my home. And I'm giving you that because I feel strongly about it, okay? And people can call here, you know, and if they're really serious, and I can chime in. My email address is REA International Group at Telcom, TELKOMSA.net. And REA stands for Reshaping Education Through Arts. And that's my company. Okay?
And your website?
Website is, let me start it with www.rodtaylor.co.za.
All right, thank you.
God bless you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Taylor, and God bless.
Mm-hmm.
And this is Dave Evans signing off with the Gist of Freedom.
Thanks, Dave.
All right, you're welcome very much. You're welcome. I definitely want – wait, hold on. Hold on.
Yeah, I mean, what's 45?